Geography. Free space for geography. Extending teaching and learning methods beyond the boundaries of campus.
Did you hear about Frontline?
Frontline,
by the way, has an outstanding production.
Geography Frontline.
Hey, frontliners, how's it going? Summer seems to kick in Germany. At least we ended the 70s. Hey, that's a good thing. I really liked talking about my hometown last week. And while being downtown Saturday morning, I had an idea for today's episode. And as you know, you're more than welcome to send in your suggestions, links, and reports on geographic topics we can discuss in the show. But usually feedback doesn't float in. And so, yeah, there are no other suggestions for this week's episode. And so I was at Wiesbaden's farmer's market on Saturday and bought 2 kilos of asparagus. White asparagus, very tasty. Yum. That's when I thought, let's talk about it in the show. Okay, not about asparagus recipes. Okay, I may actually have one for you later, but about something else. Today's topic is the asparagus economy. Yeah, and for that topic, I just want to give you some insights and so that you can make up your mind, and then we can probably talk about this in the next episodes if you want to. And so, asparagus. Why should this be a topic for our podcast? Is it of any geographic relevance? Oh, of course it is, yeah. It's a very old produce that can be found all over the world today, and what happens with asparagus today. And yeah, I looked at the situation in the United States. So, asparagus cultivation dates back to early Greek and Roman civilizations. But our local fondness got jumping in the 1920s when Massachusetts' Pioneer Valley showed its fertile self with such prodigious harvests that the town of Hadley was crowned the asparagus capital of the world. You gotta be kidding me. Asparagus capital of the world? How funny. Okay, but anyways, the situation is far from perfect in the States today. Because I read on, I think it's on Bloomberg, asparagus farmers crushed for decades by a flood of South American imports. And they have begun to expand production again in that hope that healthy eating trends and demand for homegrown vegetables will help bolster prices and sales of their stacks. Yeah, that's kind of interesting, because cheap imports, yeah, they have ruined the prices. And we all know that this can happen, right? That's nothing new. So, U.S. asparagus production is still only a third of what it was 25 years ago. Wow. There you have it. So let's hear a little about the concrete situation in the second largest asparagus producing state of the US, and that's Washington. And there on the website it says, I think that's actually from Bloomberg too. I have all the links in the show notes as always, so just be sure to just check it out. Have a look at it later. So, for an industry on the verge of disappearing, 2010 marked a rock-bottom year. To meet the demand, Washington farmers planted more new asparagus fields this year than the state has seen in a decade. In all, they are expected to plant slightly more than 6,000 acres, an improvement from 2 years ago when they planted about 5,500. But nowhere near the 30,000 acres planted in 1990. Wow! They are down from 22 years ago, from 30,000 acres to 6. Wow, that's massive, right? Wow. And number two, state Washington. Production collapsed from more than 100 million pounds this year to just 17 million pounds in 2010. From 100 million to 17. That's totally crazy. These are extreme numbers. Now, think about it. How could you turn around such a decline and give the asparagus industry a fresh restart? Yeah, think about it. trade agreements. How do prices look like in the agribusiness in the United States? Could you perhaps start marketing asparagus as something like really cool? What about health? That issue. Fresh produce, or regional or local produce. What about that? So, another website about the asparagus industry in the United States says some in the industry credit Americans' efforts to eat healthier with the increased demand of or for asparagus. And others say a price drop caused by a bumper crop in Mexico this winter enticed more people to buy fresh asparagus. Of course, you could try to brand asparagus as a, yeah, like a health product so that many people would go buy some, right? But the real killer is the price. Check this out. On Friday, fresh asparagus averaged $2.64 a pound at grocery stores and other retail outlets, according to the US Department of Agriculture. And that's actually last Friday. What? $2.65? That's about €2. €2 a pound. That's totally crazy. Who is harvesting your asparagus in the United States, huh? Illegal Mexican immigrants? I would laugh about that, but I don't think that it's actually such a funny thing. You watch. Who is harvesting that asparagus? Ever thought about that? In Germany, prices are a little higher. A little. I just bought the pound, which is 500 gram, and not the US American 450 gram, for about €5. So this would mean about two and a half times the price compared to the asparagus in the United States. Wow. But anyways, and that's still kind of not too pricey. Workers harvesting asparagus in Germany are also very low paid. And that's no secret. And it's been all over the news in the last years. And so, because no German wants to work there and then gets just a crappy back from just going down 1,000 times a day to pick one after another asparagus. And so it's very low paid and your back hurts and you have to live on site. Or you have to commute a very long distance because it's these asparagus fields are very, not in the suburbs, you know. And they're just far off. And so it's the same in the Netherlands, by the way. I found that on the website from the Netherlands. And there they say, since Poland joined the European Union in 2004, nothing stands in the way of Poles who want to work in the Netherlands. However, the cheap labor was not met with open arms. Oh, they didn't like the Polish. Wonder why? Fruit pickers and asparagus planters are tolerated because Dutch people usually don't want to do this kind of low-paid work, and seasonal workers are often exploited and housed in wet and windy campsites. Yeah, but on the other hand, they are taking away the jobs. You're taking away our jobs! Okay, that's jobs nobody wants, but anyways, you're taking them away! Screw you! That's kind of the discussion you would get after two or three beer in the bar next door. And this is the exact same story you get from countries like Germany. And of course, you could import cheaper asparagus. Yeah, of course. Key importers were Greece, Spain, and the Netherlands. That's for Germany, right? Spanish asparagus is imported almost exclusively before the harvesting in Germany, while Greek imports overlap with the asparagus season in Germany. So while you could get local or regional asparagus in Germany, German asparagus, you could also buy Greek asparagus, like in a supermarket or so. But the asparagus, and that's kind of interesting from a globalization point of view, and seems to have a kind of a special standing. It's not consumed all year long. Other than most produce, fresh asparagus has maintained its position as a seasonal product. I'm reading this from a website. When seen over the last decade, the off-season consumption of asparagus, that is during autumn and winter, does not even scratch the 2% mark of the overall amount and has not risen significantly. So, if it's considered a healthy product, maybe consumers prefer to buy that kind of produce from local farmers or from regional businesses. It kind of feels more fresh and you know what I mean, right? So local products are often marketed as being super healthy or more environmental friendly than imports. You don't have to bring them all the way down from Greece or the Netherlands or Spain. Just have them there. Right there. But then, and that's another interesting point about this asparagus industry or economy. During the last decade, the German market for asparagus has seen a tremendous dynamic. Okay, what's that all about? And this is true for the domestic cultivation in Germany as well as for the consumption. Since 1992, the German area in production has increased at more than 50%. Hey, think about the States, right? From 1990 to 2010, they had a decline from 100. What was it, like 100? Well, I have to look that up again. It was like, no, from 30,000 acres to 5.5, down to 5.5, and then to 6,000 acres. And so we have, from 92 till now, we have an increase in Germany from the area in production increased more than 50%. Wow. And while the consumption of fresh produce has risen at only, could say, 20%. And the shrinking imports were counterbalanced by an increase in domestic production. Okay, so people seem to, or at least they are buying more local food if they want that. I don't know. But I would think so. You would buy 20% more like people usually would buy in Germany. So each German eats annually about 1.1 kilogram of fresh asparagus, which amounts to between 85 and 90,000 tons. A growing share of it in 2000 alone, 60%, is provided by domestic production. Oh, 60% domestic production. Not too bad. And I would really argue, you might have another opinion, but anyways, I would argue that this is because of a changed buying behavior, because of the environment and a more sensitized understanding of your own body. It's more and more about quality and not about the lowest price. Or am I wrong? What do you think? But what about the Polish workers? Because of being part of the European Union now, Polish workers will probably want to earn more because, you know, cost of living in their home country also rises, right? So who should replace them? What do you think? Can just anybody do the job? Okay, you don't need to have a bachelor or master's degree to pick asparagus, you would think, right? Or do you need special skills to harvest that kind of produce? I don't know. Let me know what you think, because it's actually the fact that some Polish workers get more money now and they're still employed and you don't get other people to pick the asparagus. And that's not, for sure, that's not a cultural thing or so. But they kind of know what they're doing. The workers, they did that for years. And so it happened that the workers are Polish. So anyways, but what do you think? Let me know. Just send me an email to comment@geography.com or call the voicemail. You know, the Skype name is Geography. Just open up Skype, bring up the dial panel and type in Geography. And then you'll forward it to the Geography voicemail. And after a short sentence from me, you'll hear my voice then. You can just leave your comment, your audio comment on the voicemail, and I can integrate that into the next show. Would be great to have one or two feedbacks, voicemail feedbacks for the next episode. Or you can post your thoughts on Facebook, on our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/geography. And here's one fine recipe for you. Ben Wilmot from his album Nowhere to Go But Up. The song is called recipe.
Don't worry, this is not a song about how I am not perfect. I think that's obvious without writing it anyway. It's not a ballad saying I can't live without her. There are enough of those on the radio these days. It's not a ditty about the bad shape Earth is in. I've had all I can stand just by turning on TV. It's not a tune in which I lay my troubles in plain view. I've tried to keep those hidden so they only bother me. It just takes one cup away and a small pinch of sea. How it goes. A tablespoon of good luck and a half pound of hard work will show. Sometimes the dish can taste sour, but the next day it will be quite sweet. Bring it all up to a boil, stir and serve. That is my recipe. Though I'm not too sure that I could be if I tried. Don't wanna bore with something that's been done before. Oh, I know I could do that, even if I don't know why. I've learned there is no one perfect or a recipe. There is no book that can tell me how it's done. Just can't let my thinking get the best of me. I mean, all that really matters is if it feels right when I'm done. It just takes one cup away and a small pinch of sea. How it goes. A tablespoon of good luck and a half pound of hard work will show. Sometimes the dish can taste sour, but the next day it will be quite sweet. Bring it all up to a boil, stir and serve. That is my recipe. With all of life's detours, I felt like this before. There's still one thing I know. Away and a small pinch of sea, how it goes. A tablespoon of good luck and a half pound of hard work will show. Sometimes the dish can taste sour, but the next day it will be quite sweet. Bring it all up to a boil, stir and serve. That is my recipe. That's my recipe. That's my recipe. That's my recipe. That's my recipe.
Ben Wilmert with his song Recipe from the album Nowhere to Go But Up. From the PodSafe Music Network, you can listen to the song on music.mevio.com, or you can download it for 99 cents only on iTunes. The links to both the US and the German iTunes store are, as always, in the show notes.
What's that sound?
What a little competition can do, huh? This is absolutely crazy. Hey, frontliners. 4 weeks. For like month. We have this sound riddle category called What's That Sound, where we try to sensitize ourselves for the auditive environment in this city. And last week, I announced a slight change to this sound riddle. The first frontliner who sends in 5 right answers wins a Frontline t-shirt. Hey, and you know what? The day I posted this on our Facebook page, I got 3 posts alone. Just on Friday, That's crazy. So, because usually nobody replies, or just one frontliner every two or three episodes or so. So, okay, the t-shirt competition thing seems to kind of work. So here's what you had to listen to in the last episode. Oh, not too hard to deconstruct, hmm? So, Judith posted on Facebook, ein Jogger auf einem mit feinem Kies geschottertem Weg. Hmm, okay, meaning something like a runner on a gritty pathway. Hey, Judith, this show is in English, right? And since episode 106 now, that's been a while, about half a year or so, in case you haven't noticed. So, please try to not post in German. That would be great so that all listeners could understand what we are saying. But I'm sure that there's still wide listener base from Germany, so you kind of get the idea what she meant. So, a runner on a gritty pathway. So, and then we have another suggestion from Geographer. Hey, Torsten, here's my guess. A runner on an unpaved path, greets Geographer. And he writes it with a G. Dot O. Dot Graffa, with a G-H-R-A-F-F-A. Nice. Okay, so Lydia, she tried to solve the sound riddle too, but she wasn't able to listen to the audio file, and that's sad. She says, hey, what's the trick for listening to those sound riddles on a non-Apple machine? Linux, to be more specific. I couldn't find an app that lets me open those files. So hey, Lily, I'm really sorry to hear that, really. So I did a little research, I think, because I'm not owning a Linux machine, and I'm, most of the time even avoiding to use Windows machines. So, but I think SOX, S-O-X, might be the right program for Linux, which unfortunately didn't work on Lydia's machine, because I already posted it on the Facebook page on facebook.com/geography, and she replied that it wouldn't work, that kind of version. So, the sound files come in .if format, and that usually can be played back on any operating system, even on Linux, or especially on Linux, I don't know. So, if anybody got a better idea for the Linux users like Lydia, please, frontliners, go help her and everybody else out, and go to facebook.com/geography and post something there, like a better solution than my SOX app I found, and I don't really know if it works, because I can't test it. I don't have a Linux machine, as I said. So, okay, but anyways, back to the sound riddle. This sound is indeed caused by a runner on an unpaved path. Judith and Geographer got it right. And if I take a look at the time the answers came in, because it's about who sent it in first, right? To get the point, to sum it up to 5 points to get the t-shirt. Then I see Judith, and she posted at 2:48 p.m. On Fridays. And Geographer, he sent me an email, and I received that email at 12:37, and so we have the first winner. The first right answer is counted in for Geographer. 4 more right answers to go, and the t-shirt is yours. Hey, and this week the sound riddle to solve sounds like this. Want to hear it again? Yeah, just go ahead, write an email to comment at geography.com, or post a Facebook comment, or call the voicemail to get your first or your second point for the t-shirt competition. I am really curious if you can get this one right. That's not too easy, I think. I almost forgot to talk about the Quick Vote, our fast and easy voting system that gives us instant feedback on what the frontline community is thinking about a certain topic. Last week, we talked about Wiesbaden and its high amount of houses built in the epoch of historicism. The question you answered was the following. Should Wiesbaden become a World Heritage Site because of historicism? And I have to say, we've got a very diverse sample of answers this week, and that is absolutely awesome. It blew me away when I saw this kind of results. Okay, should Wiesbaden become a World Heritage Site because of historicism? Answer A. Of course, it's a perfect example for historicism. And, 11% voted for answer A. But we have 22%, double the amount, voted for answer B. Hey, why not? Why shouldn't it be a World Heritage Site? Good. And then we have like 11% that had another opinion. That would be answer D. And answer C is actually the one who got the most votes. No, there are too many heritage sites. 56%. I see. The majority of voters don't want my hometown to get the World Heritage status. You know what? That's totally fine with me, because I'm not so sure if I would have voted the same way. Like answer A, of course, it's a perfect example. It is a perfect example, but I still don't think that it would have to get that status. Why? Because it's always the same discussion with the World Heritage Label. On the one hand, you want to raise awareness in as many places possible that there are things worth protecting, and so following this path, you would have to argue, okay, yeah, of course, it should be a World Heritage Site because it is a perfect example for historicism, and that's something worth protecting. But on the other hand, you don't want to downgrade things like the pyramids or Niagara Falls, right? Because of something like historicism in Wiesbaden. Really? Come on, World Heritage Pyramids, Niagara Falls, historicism. And the third point, we've talked about Diocletian's palace in Split, right? Where the heritage label prevents the city to modify, rearrange and upgrade existing urban structures. Like renew houses, for example. And so I think that's not such a perfect thing if you live there. Anyways, this week we have a new question to answer, and I would love to see more, even more comments and votes than for last week's quick vote. Poland's EU membership destroys asparagus industry. That's the question for today's quick vote. Poland's EU membership destroys asparagus industry. A. No way. Just get other workers. Answer B. Well, could be. You need skilled workers. Answer C. Of course, prices will explode. Or D. Another opinion. So, please go ahead and do some reading. Yeah, do some reading yourself. There are a lot of articles about asparagus on the web, and not only tasty recipes. And if you should have another opinion, please add a comment in the quick vote window. Because, you know, after voting, you always get to see the recent results. And if you should have another opinion, please add a comment in the quick vote window. Because after voting, you always get to see the recent results. And under these results, there's the option button to start a new comment about the issue. So go ahead and do so. And we'll talk about this and all the results in the next episode of Geography Frontline. In 1799, Alexander von Humboldt, one of the first geographers of the world, is on his way towards the Americas. He describes what he sees, what he senses, very detailed, very colorful. So we try to get inspired by his excursion and his descriptions for our own empirical research, and so we are reading from his diary. And last time he had contact with some island people that disappeared in the night. The master of one of the canoes offered to remain on board the Pizarro as coasting pilot, practico. He was a Guaiqueria of an excellent disposition, sagacious in his observations, and he had been led by intelligent curiosity to notice the productions of the sea as well as the plants of the country. Yeah, that seems to be just somebody like Humboldt, right? So they got a new coasting pilot on board. And they are sailing. As we steered westward, we soon came in sight of the little island of Cubagua, now entirely deserted, but formerly celebrated for its fishery of pearls. There, the Spaniards, immediately after the voyages of Columbus and Ojeda, founded under the name of New Cadiz, a town of which there now remains no vestige. At the beginning of the 16th century, the pearls of Cubagua were known at Sevilla, at Toledo, and at the great fairs of Augsburg and Bruges. That's interesting, right? Now we learned something about Spanish explorers, the common manner to name a town after one town you already have in your home country. Think of New York, all the new countries, towns, names that are around. And we learn about the trade of pearls to Europe in the early 16th century. Interesting. I didn't know that. They were trading pearls back and forth in that kind of time. There being little wind, the captain preferred standing off and on till daybreak. We passed a part of the night on deck, and the Goicoechea pilot conversed with us respecting the animals and plants of his country. Yeah, sure. The native respects the animals. What else can he do, right? He's kind of a native. He's living with the animals. That's really an Eurocentric view of people they would call the Europeans in that time less educated, right? What do you think? Don't we find the image of what's it called? The noble savage in his description. This human, like, living in peace with nature and loving the animals, respecting everything, and he's kind of stupid but nice, yeah, like an animal in a zoo could watch it and find it very curious. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of a little offended by this description. But okay, anyways, you have to see it in the context of 1799 and not of 2012, and so. I don't know. If you have any comments on that, send an email and let me know. I would be happy to play that back in the next episode. So let's go on and with the last paragraph for today. We learned with great satisfaction that there was, a few leagues from the coast, a mountainous region inhabited by the Spaniards, in which the cold was sensibly felt. And that in the plains there were two species of crocodiles very different from each other, besides boas, electric eels, and several kinds of tigers. and let's hope that the party doesn't get eaten up by those tigers, right? So what happens next? Okay, let's read more about from Humboldt's voyage to the Americas in the next Frontline episode. This week's announcements are about a European conference called EuroGeo Conference, Geography and Global Understanding Connecting the Sciences. And that's taking place in June 1st and 2nd, June 2012 in Dublin, Ireland. And on the website, they say, geography, bridging the physical and human sciences, deals with places, people, and cultures. It explores international issues ranging from physical, urban, and rural environments and their evolution to climate, pollution, development, and political economy. Key issues are how these features are interconnected, forming patterns and processes impacting on present and future generations. The role of geotechnologies and geoinformation would seem to be of paramount importance. By its nature, geography continues to connect the physical, human, and technological sciences with GIS-enhancing research, economic development, and production. That sounds kind of interesting, right? So if you want to participate in the conference, take a look at this week's show notes and find out about dates and relevant links. And this is it. Episode 124 of Geography Frontline is over. I hope you haven't listened to the show all hungry since I started to talk about asparagus. The show notes, they have some nice recipe for asparagus salad with peas and toasted almonds in it. That's tasty. And have a great week, everybody. Keep sending in feedback and never forget, the network is us.